Good evening, listeners. Tonight's episode of the Voice of Indie podcast is an encore presentation. The phone lines and Twitter are closed. We will return live next week. In the meantime, please enjoy this encore presentation with Lieutenant Commander, USN retired, Jerry Pate, and special guest, Robert G. Willescroft.
Time for Voice of Indie. Your hosts today are Beam Weeks, author, producer, and marketing monster for independent multimedia publisher Fresh Ink Group, and Stephen Jeeves, author, producer, composer, and publisher for Fresh Ink Group.
And it's that time again. Happy Wednesday. Hump day, everybody. Time for another episode of the Voice of Indie podcast. This is episode number 108, and tonight is going to be a good one. I'm your host, Bean Weeks, and, well, they're always good ones. All of them are. So 107 previous have been good ones. And with me is my co-host, Mr. Stephen Jeeves. How are you doing tonight, Stephen?
I am just thrilled to be here, excited to be part of this show, really looking forward to this. We've been working hard on a bunch of stuff this week, getting some books out and having some books that are coming out next week as well. And, well, you're almost caught up on audiobooks, and we're caught up on videos now. So today we actually worked ahead. We started doing animations for what book coming up, Mr. Weeks?
For The Secret Collector. That's going to be my new one, which hopefully it'll be done by the middle of next month. I've been at work on it a little bit here and there. I work when I can, and some days I do a lot of the spend most of the day on these audiobooks, and when I get done with that, the last thing I want to do is continue sitting at my computer, so I'm kind of falling behind on it, but I worked on it a bit last night, so that's cool. Get that thing done and ready and have something new to share. We do have, over here on Twitter, a couple of tweets. You want to take a look at these?
You go first.
All righty. Let's see. There's, they're both from Verwayne. Well, no, they're not. There's one from Joe Conjo. You can take Joe Conjo. And Verwayne, he says, I just sent the final chapter of my murder investigation to Vella. I think it ended up being about 49,500 words. All right. In the Marsh. So there's a link on there. Get to Twitter, hashtag Fresh Ink Group, and you'll find Verwayne's tweet, and hit that link and go over there and take a look.
All right. Joe Conjul on Twitter says, I'm bummed that I can't stay and listen to the show tonight. Well, we might as well just pack it in, Beam.
Man.
He says he's at a dealership trying to get his car serviced and secure a rental for a trip he needs to go on this week. So he'll have to catch the replay. And he wishes everybody have a great show with a smiley face. We intend to, Joe. Thanks for the support.
Yeah. Thanks for the support. Just, it'll be up in the archives in a few days. So go over there and check that out. All right. So we are going to invite you, the listening audience, to call in or to do as Joe and Verwayne just did on Twitter. Participate that way. If you've got a question or a comment for tonight's guest, this is how you can participate.
Call 516-453-9902 right now with your questions or comments for tonight's guest. Or post a note on Twitter with hashtag Fresh Ink Group in the body of the tweet and we'll read it on air. That's 516-453-9902 or hashtag Fresh Ink Group on Twitter.
All right.
Hey. All right. My my rundown notes here say that my next topic is Ingram sucks. So we'll see what... We'll see what I mean by that. I mentioned in the show last week that Ingram's raising its print prices again for all the companies that they own, and there must be millions of them because I think they own just about every printing company in the world now. In Europe and the United Kingdom, they're raising their print prices 4.9%. I also said that they canceled like all of our long-term publishing contracts and said that they're going to offer us something sweet. What they offered us is not sweet. In fact, it prompted me to write Ingram sucks on my outline here. So we're in the process of trying to work some stuff out with them, but you're going to start seeing a little bit of upheaval in the indie publishing industry as deals start changing and contracts start expiring and things start shuffling. So That's what Ingram sucks means, but I don't really mean that. Ingram's the big kahuna. It's the gorilla that we have to deal with, and we're going to be nice to it no matter what it does to us.
Yeah. Now, as we had mentioned just a little while ago, the audiobooks. I've been hard at work on these audiobooks. Girl Wears Those Shoes by Jenny Wong. That's I'm at the mercy of the voice artist. She works and gets them to me when she does. Ellie Collins, Mad Max and Sweet Sarah. I have all the files for that. So, and I'm out of 9 chapters. I just finished chapter 7 today. So, barring any lines that need to be reread, that should be ready to go here within the next week or couple of weeks, at least on my end. You know, then we go through the whole, process of uploading them, but I should be done on my end here within the next week or two, so keep an eye out for that. We've got a newsletter, and you'll find out about all these, this and much more through our newsletter. And if you want to become a subscriber to this newsletter, and we want you to become a subscriber, here's how you can do that.
Stay on top of these podcasts and all things Fresh Inquiry with our weekly digital newsletter. New releases, videos, stories, excerpts, interviews, and more. Sign up now on the homepage of freshinkgroup.com and be the one who knows what's what.
What?
Yeah, how exciting.
Official show now.
Yeah, so let's take a look at the print sales for this week, see what's going on. In the number 5 slot, one of our co-guests today has a book, Operation Icebreaker, A Mac McDowell Mission by Robert G. Willis-Croft, is in the number 5 slot. Now, that's Cold War submarine missions. Now, I don't know if we have anybody in our audience today who's interested in, you know, submarine books, but this Mac McDowell mission series is very, very cool. 3 of them are out. He's got the 4th one written, and we're looking forward to getting that out pretty soon, too. That's in our number 5 slot. Our number 3 and 4 slots this week, again, Mark Herndon, The High Road, Memories from a Long Trip. We published that book 6.5 years ago. It's the memoir of the guy who played drums for the supergroup Alabama for almost 3 decades. 6.5 years ago, we published that thing, and it still tends to run in our top 5 bestsellers every week. Now, in our top 2 slots is a book that's been going gangbusters since we published it about 3 weeks ago, and that's Still Not Enough, Minority Millennials in the Workforce by Janelle A. Jordan. Excellent book. Very cool book. And the numbers here, I'm having to take a deep breath here. Like if you take, say, our number 5 slot, you multiply that by 35 and then some, you get her softcover sales. You multiply that by 55 and then some to get her hardcover sales. These numbers are off the chart. This is just...
Yeah, she's doing quite well.
Yeah, and she's out there working it. She's scheduling events and, you know, doing little publicity things and hooking
like
up with people.
Like kids say, selling like hotcakes.
Selling like hotcakes, except I don't know if the kids are saying that. But she's working it, and good for her. And she's got community support. She's got the people that are, you know, helping support her in all the different ways. And she's doing everything right. So congratulations, Janelle. Again, you're in our top 2 slots in our print sales for this week.
All right. Now, in pre-release right now, we've got a couple of books. Practical Problems by last week's guest, Jay Ajluni. That's in pre-release. Get over to Amazon and reserve your copy. And tonight's guest, Jerry Pate, his book Submariner is in pre-release. Get over to Amazon and get your copy. Now that is submarine and then hyphen ER. So keep that in mind when you're typing it in looking for it. But you can find the links on Twitter. We got them all over Twitter right now.
The ebook editions of that are populating worldwide. We're seeing it now. It's already on Barnes & Noble and Kobo and a lot of the others too. So it should be most of them by tomorrow, maybe a day or two later for a couple of the stragglers, but 212 major retailers worldwide will be selling different editions of that book in digital form. The print editions, soft cover and hard cover, went up today, and the approvals should be done by tomorrow afternoon, I would think, in which case it'll start populating throughout the world by tomorrow night or the following morning. So if you get excited about today's guest's book, and you want to wait for the print edition, give that an extra day or two. It's worth it. But hey, nothing wrong with going ahead and getting your digital copy to read while you're, you know, out waiting for a doctor's appointment, but keep your nice print copy at home too. But at any rate, Submariner is populating. It's out there. Also, it's selling quite well in pre-sale. A couple of days ago, I checked, and I was seeing that it was number 41 in military and spies biographies. Mr. Willis-Croft just checked a few minutes ago, and it's up to number 25. That's number 25 in all of military and spies biographies. And there's like almost 100,000 in that category. Number 25, that's rocking and rolling. Although I'm not sure you want to rock and roll in a submarine, but at any rate, military and war biographies in the Kindle store, it has risen from 53 a couple of days ago to number 31 today. So it is really kicking there too. And then in memoirs, it's number 202, ranked 202 in memoirs. Now that's not specific memoirs, military memoirs, or anything like that. It's just memoirs. And memoirs, there are literally millions of them on Amazon. So to be ranked number 202 in memoirs is, you know, Janelle Jordan kind of numbers. So congratulations to today's guest. That thing is rolling too.
All right. Now, listeners, a little while ago, Stephen read the tweet from Joe Conjo, who said, unfortunately, he can't listen to tonight's show live because he's got some things he's got to take care of. But if you're ever in that position and you miss an episode, you can't make it live, or there's an episode that you've listened to live and you want to hear it again because it's just that good, we have an archive, and here's where you can find all of those, every one of our previous episodes, right here.
If you miss a show, find us in the archive, in the Fresh Ink Group channel on YouTube, on Spotify, or under the podcast tab at freshinkgroup.com, beamweeks.com, and stephengees.com. On YouTube, be sure to like and subscribe.
Like and subscribe.
Yeah. So that archives, is anybody checking that stuff out, Beam?
Yes, they are. In fact, right now, still, several weeks later, the Caleb Pirtle III episode, that is just, I mean, doing incredible numbers. All of them are, they do their steady numbers, but for some reason, he's just got people that are, I don't know if it's a return visit, people listening to it over and over again, or if it's just he's got such a big fan base that people are hitting it. Now, here's the cool thing. These guests, they will take these episodes, these links, and they will post them in their social media. So if you're ever a guest on this show, promote the heck out of this show on your social media, because we will keep those in the archives, you know, forever, you know, or as long as they can be there, which is pretty much forever. So you know, go check out the past guests. If you see a link for one of their shows that they've been on here on their social media, click that link. Hit the like and share it.
Yeah, don't be afraid to ask others to help share and spread the word about that, too. We're doing a little something different this time. We lined up a blog tour for tonight's guest, which we've done before. So we had like, I think it was 10 or 11 bloggers out there post a bunch of material about the book and tonight's podcast in order to build up pre-podcast publicity. But this time, we have a group of bloggers lined up who are going to post about the archived version of the show after tonight. So we're going to be out there promoting the archived version, just like we promoted the live podcast version. We're going to see how that works out, but I'll bet you we get some numbers.
I bet you we do, too. Okay, so I'm going to hit these buttons here. There we go. So let's introduce, we got two guests tonight. I'm going to read the first bio. Dr. Willis-Croft, is a most listeners to the show know who he is. He's a retired submarine officer, deep sea and saturation diver, scientist, author of numerous books, and hundreds of articles, and a lifelong adventurer. He spent 22 months underwater, a year in the equatorial Pacific, 3 years in the Arctic ice pack, and a year at the geographic South Pole. He holds degrees in marine physics and meteorology, a doctorate for developing a system to protect scuba divers in contaminated water. A prolific author of both nonfiction and fiction, he lives in Centennial, Colorado with his family.
Yeah. Now, many of you are familiar with Dr. Willis-Croft. He's a Fresh Ink Group member and a prolific author of ours, you know, does multiple series plus other books on his own and stuff. He's our co-guest today. Our main guest is Jerry Pate, the author of today's book. Dr. Willis Croft is old friends with him, worked with him, helped him compile the stories and basically interface with us to help get this whole thing off the ground, because Dr. Willis Croft is a veteran at putting these books out and knowing how things work. So his help was very invaluable in this, especially since Jerry's a new author, a retiree who just had so many stories, it was time to get him out. So here's the bio for Jerry Pate. Lieutenant Commander Gerald L. Pate was born in Hamlet, North Carolina in May 1946. He was a self-described free-range kid living in a small rural railroad town where everyone knew everyone. He joined the Navy right out of high school and found himself on the open bridge of a diesel submarine in a North Atlantic storm several months later. Boy, that's called jumping in, isn't it? Before he completed his 30-year career, Jerry worked his way up to leading sonar technician on his diesel sub and then graduated to nukes, where he ultimately became chief of the boat before being awarded a commission for his outstanding service. Ashore, he managed test missile launches for the entire East Coast submarine fleet and coordinated NASA's downrange space shuttle launch recovery efforts, climbing to the rank of lieutenant commander before he finally retired to a civilian position where he continued to serve the Navy's and NASA's needs. Welcome to the show, Jerry and Robert.
Welcome, gentlemen.
Thank you. It's nice to be here and looking forward to this interview.
Cool. You out there, Robert?
And this is Robert, likewise.
Yeah.
This is Robert, likewise.
Yeah.
All right.
We're gonna ask more questions of Jerry early on here, since everybody knows Robert by now. Jerry, we know you're in Florida now. Where are you from? Where all have you lived in your life? Where were you the free-range kid?
Well, in the town of Hamlet, North Carolina, which is Richmond County. It's about 20 miles south of Southern Pines. And, you know, without cell phones, parents were not concerned every second of the day where their child was. So myself, along with half my neighborhood kids, we'd get up and take off on Saturday morning, and we'd spend the entire day just either in swamps or woods, and we'd go sometime 5, 6, 7 miles from home, and the only rule we had was to be home before the street lights came on, and that's what we did. You know, we never did anything illegal, kind of.
Yeah.
And we actually stayed out of trouble for the most part, and it was a great time to grow up. Lots of good friends then, and still good friends today.
Now, when I was a kid, I spent a lot of time in swamps, but I was a critter catcher. I was always looking for snakes and frogs and stuff. What were you doing in swamps? Just hanging out, or?
Well. There was a lot of exploring, and if we ran across a water moccasin or anything like that, we usually would catch it. And mainly just something to do instead of standing on a street corner and, you know, looking for mischief. We'd explore, and a lot of time in the river hills looking for Indian arrowheads.
Oh, okay.
There was a lot of Native Americans that were all through the Carolinas, and we found some of the places where they had been trading up and down the Petey River and the hills on both sides of the river for many, many miles. After a wood company would come through and cut all the trees down they wanted, they would hook a anchor chain between two large bulldozers and pull everything up in the piles. So, and then they burned it off. And after everything settled, they'd come out and replant pine trees for the pulpwood industry. And in between being cleared off and planting pine trees, we were out there on the weekends, and everything was fully exposed. It had been covered for thousands of years, and every once in a while, you find a place where they had been camping forever and ever, and there was arrowheads, there was stones with they'd used to grind pine nuts or corn down in. And when I joined the Navy in 64, I had over 200 perfect points. So,
wow.
Just things like that.
Wow. Beam, you want to hit Twitter real quick?
Yeah, those were the kind of things I love doing, going out and looking for. Of course, I think we found one arrowhead up here in Michigan. My little brother found it. But other than that, I mean, it was just fun getting out there and looking for that.
Yeah, Civil War artifacts in Tennessee, or we used to do that,
mm-hmm.
too. And we found some stuff.
Over on Twitter, Verwayne Greenhouse said, I bought my pre-sale copy a few days back. And he said, I've been trying to listen to at least 3 or 4 archived shows a week. Well, bless your soul, Verwayne. And share them, you know. Share them and put them out there on Twitter, on, you know, Facebook, wherever.
We do have a couple of callers, so let's do this real quick first. You know, usually we talk to the authors a little bit, find out a little bit about them personally, and then talk in more detail about the book or books that the author's written. In this case, let's go ahead and put it out there. The name of the book is Submariner. Now, if I said Submariner, that wouldn't be right, would it? You guys want to explain that?
Go ahead, Robert.
Well, I met a British fellow, a British ex-submariner, as they call it, online several days ago, and we chatted about the difference between submariner and submariner, and to his astonishment, he had no idea that it was different. Basically, in America, we call submariners people who are not quite up to par as mariners. A submariner is a guy who drives submarines. And if you were to go into a submarine bar and you were to talk about submariners, you'd probably pick yourself up off the deck.
Of course, I wouldn't know anything about those submarine bars.
No. I don't think I've ever been in one. I'm going to have to Google that next time I travel, see if there's a submarine bar near a base somewhere.
Yeah.
But at any rate, that's
I've
the
heard
book.
About them.
It's Submariner, and it's got 60 chapters of Jerry Pate's stories, experiences he's had, things that have happened, whatnot, and it's just full of personal experiences. Some of them are harrowing, some of them are exciting, some of them are funny. So that's the book that we're talking about. So let's go ahead and take some calls, Beam, and I assume that people want to talk about the book.
All righty. This first call we're going to take, since we got a couple of them, I'm going to say your area code, and this is area code 646. Welcome to the show. Where are you calling from?
It is I again, Beam.
And hi, Dr.
Helen. Greetings, Dr.
Gary,
hi. Welcome to the show.
Listen,
hi.
Here's what I have to say. Today I was able to walk 20 steps with the help of two physio people. But, however, listen to this. Some of the people here went to the Mickey Mouse School of Nursing.
Uh-oh.
You have to laugh. Anyway, I'm enjoying tonight's talented writer, and I always enjoy your fig soirees.
Well, we appreciate that,
Dr. Well, we always enjoy
Dr.
hearing
Helen.
From you. And it's good that
but you need to
got...
write a book about the Mickey Mouse School of Nursing.
That'll be your next book.
I'm not kidding. People without empathy, you know?
Yep.
But mostly they're good people.
Well, thanks
so
for calling in, Dr.
Listen
Helen.
To all the talents. You're welcome.
All right.
I enjoy.
Yeah.
All right.
Thanks. Take care, Dr. Helen.
Thank you.
All right. Let's see. We are going to take this next call as area code 708. Welcome to the show. You are on the air. What's your name and where are you calling from?
Hi, I'm Patricia Guthrie.
Hi, Pat Guthrie. How you doing tonight?
I'm doing good. How are you?
Doing well.
Yeah.
You have a question or a comment?
Yeah, I kind of I know nothing about submarines, nothing at all. But what I kind of wanted to know is, what does it feel like to be on a submarine for that long a period of time, in such close confinement, and whether you ever got claustrophobic or whatever?
Hmm.
Well, I can answer that. and it's in the book. In order to get through submarine school, you have to go through first of all, you have to pass a submarine physical. Then there's a small chamber that is described in the book, and they will put roughly 15, 16 people in this chamber with a Navy corpsman, and also one of the operator is a diver. Mm-hmm. And if you have any hint of claustrophobia, just being in the chamber will bring it on when they close the door. But once they start pressurizing the chamber and the noise from the high-pressure air coming in and the heat building up inside, that will bring out any claustrophobia you have, and you'll be raising your hands, screaming and hollering, and you want out of there. And then after that, you go into the smaller chamber with roughly the same amount of people, and it's on the side of the submarine. Now, this is years ago. It's on the side of the submarine escape tank, and you're 50 feet underwater. So not only are they pressurizing that tank, that space you're in, but they're filling it up with water at the same time. And that makes the space even smaller. It's still noisy. And if there's a problem, you know, say you made it through the pressure chamber, if there's a problem, you will not get past that point if you have claustrophobia, because the only thing out of the water is your face and whatever hand you have up, hanging on to things and moving until it's your turn to step out on the platform, and you're underwater at 50 feet, and then you go to the surface. Mm-hmm. And then, of course, there's psychological tests and other things, and then there's academic requirements of getting through the school. But as far as claustrophobia, if you make it to sub-school, you won't have a problem with submarine. And the new submarines especially, they have plenty of room. Now, they got a lot of equipment inside, but you still have plenty of room.
Yeah, okay. That's interesting. I don't know that I can stand it for more than 2 minutes, but yeah.
Now, is it a common occurrence with people getting claustrophobic and wanting out while they're in the practice tanks?
When I went through, we only had one person out of my particular group that was in the tank. And he let it be known very early on that he wanted out of there. So, but you don't go to a submarine without going through that. Because you can't go to sea on a sub and have somebody freaking out on you. And the foreman has to sedate them for 2 or 3 months or even longer if they're on fast attack.
Yeah, Captain comes on. Now knock it off, or I'll turn this sub around.
No, that's not going to happen.
Hey, this is Robert. Can I get a word in here?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I just wanted to let the audience know that because this is such an interesting topic and it just grabs everybody's attention, this is how Jerry starts the book.
All right.
Yeah.
Okay, so about the book, whose idea was it did you write these things down, Jerry, over the years, these stories? Or did you just keep them in your head? And then whose idea was it, hey, let's put this into a book?
Well, I had, if I can back up a bit, if you ask me what time it is, I'll build you a watch. I had seven uncles that were involved in World War II. They were involved in all branches of the service. They were on the East Coast, the West Coast. And like most documentaries that you see on TV about people, they just never talked about what once they joined the service, what they did, where they went, et cetera. You were lucky to get a couple of words out of them. Now, as I got older, teenage years, I would press them even harder. Now, some of them didn't come back. In fact, one of them was shot down in the Army Air Corps on his first mission over Italy.
Oh,
another guy that was at Bataan, he ended up one of the groups that was loaded on the train and taken to a port there and then went on the hell ships. And after it got underway, it was torpedoed by American submarine.
Wow.
And the ones that survived the being torpedoed, the Japanese machine gunned them in the water. So I found out that I had one uncle that landed at D-Day. He was part of a mortar crew, fought through the hedgerows, got as far as the Rhine River at Krupp Ironworks, and eventually got some shrapnel from a German mortar and had to be sent to Birmingham, England to recover. And his brother was on a destroyer escort, and they were involved in the task force that forced the U-505 to surface. And that's where the United States and Britain were able to get a hold of the four-dial Enigma. And from that point until the end of the war, we sank more German, or U.S. sank more German submarines than previously, because they knew exactly where they all were. So and the U-505, by the way, has been completely restored, and it's in Chicago at the Museum of Science and Industry in its own building, and it's open for tours, et cetera. So now that I've gone through all that, I got thinking one day, I says, I want my sons and my grandkids to know what their grandfather did when he was in the Navy. And fortunately for me and the readers, I have an excellent long-term memory. Don't ask me what I had for breakfast, but I'm good at things that happened back in the 60s and 70s and on up. And so the first year of COVID, I sat down. I said, well, if we're stuck in here, and I started typing, and it was, you know, nothing fancy. Just I was just putting down stories. And I didn't even have the basic software program that will correct all the mistakes and stuff, but I realized as I read all my mess that if I wanted anybody to understand what I was saying, I had to download some software. Now, compared to what Robert has and what you guys use, I was down to just a little bit above the bottom of software. Now, I started posting some of my stories online to a submarine I was on, the Von Steuben. They have a Facebook site, and then some of the other submarine sites, plus my high school back in Hamlet, which is a small town. I think the largest population was about 5,300 at one time. And I started posting my stories. And here again, they were rough as far as sentence structure and punctuation, you know, all the correct stuff. And people started commenting, especially with submarine guys. They go, man, you got to write a book. And I said, nah, I have no interest in that. And then some of the folks back in my hometown who had gone on to college and came back as teachers, they were reading them, and they started getting on my case. So, and I knew from I knew that Robert Willis-Croft had published some books, and I contacted him. I'm in Florida down here on Merritt Island, but I knew how to get a hold of him. And I contacted him, and he says, well, send me a couple of your stories. So I picked two or three, and I emailed him out there. Well, it wasn't 3 hours later, he goes, send me all your stories.
Yeah.
So he has been my saving grace, so to speak. Between Robert and his wife Jill, they have just dragged me along with this project, and I would never be where I am today with this book without their help and guidance, and it means a lot to me.
Oh, that's terrific. So, what about all the pictures? Are all the pictures from you, or did those come from other sources? How did that all come together?
Well,
we're talking 60 photos, listeners.
Yeah, some of the photos were all official photos. For example, the first D-5 Trident II missile that was shot from a submarine, it came out of the water and started doing spirals. And it made it through about 2.5 spirals before it self-destructed. And that's, as I say in the book, that's when we realized we were too close. So real close, even though for every other launch, that's where we always stayed. And the Russian AGI that shows up out there, we always talk to him on open mic and give him his position. Of course, he never responds, but you'll see a little puff of smoke come out of his stacks, and he heads over to the spot we had designated for him, because he's not there to interfere with the launch. He wants it to be successful like everything else so he can get his water samples or whatever and then head on back to Havana. Right. So then the quality of some of my photographs were not sufficient enough for publication. So with Robert's help, he looked around and he found some similar photos but of higher quality. And I looked around and I found some stuff, and we went back and forth on a few of them. And we got it worked out, and that's where the photos came from.
Well, it's definitely a great collection. We do we still have Pat on, Beam?
Pat,
hi,
you're still here, right? Yeah.
Yeah, Pat.
Yes, sir.
We like hanging out with you, Pat. right now we're gonna roll a commercial for Submariner. Everybody can hear about it and point out that the video for that is over on YouTube too, if you want to see a very cool video.
All right.
Submariner. 30 years of hijinks and keeping the fleet afloat. Jerry Pate's semi-autobiographical collection of 60 stories recounts his 30 years in and around the U.S. Navy submarine fleet, ranging from lighthearted to wrenching. All are poignant inside looks at naval operations rarely seen by outsiders. Topics include the real story behind the shuttle Challenger tragedy, risking his own life underwater, discovering a Soviet spy living across the street, surviving when an engine ignites, critical missions, and the everyday lives of men and women of the fleet. Compiled by author Robert G. Willis-Croft and proudly published by Fresh Ink Group. Submariner is available worldwide in hardcover, softcover, and all ebook formats. Dive into Submariner for hijinks and breathtaking adventure with this poignant memoir by a true American hero.
We had a lot of fun making that video. We'd like to see a bunch of people get over there and like it and share it.
Yep, it's good. I was flabbergasted, to say the least.
Oh, cool.
So, it was good. Now, I want to tell you guys, I'm not happy about one thing. Maybe this will help some of the other future authors out there. I said, for this podcast now, I went ahead and took a shower. Now, it's not Saturday, but I took my shower today, and I shaved. And yesterday, I got a haircut. And I got on my nice diesel boat T-shirt here that doesn't have any holes in it. And then Robert goes, well, you know, it's only audio. And I said, well, why didn't you tell me that earlier?
Oh.
I just can't believe it. Of course you believe it, don't you?
Now, we're kind of operating on the assumption that when you called into last week's show, you were aware of that.
Yeah, I never could get my camera working. I don't know what the problem was with that.
Now, you have a nascent Facebook account, which we're going to start trying to encourage people to go over and take a look at. So a photo of you just finishing the podcast would be a good thing to put on Facebook.
Yeah.
Well, it could be.
Yeah.
I owe a lot of my success in the Navy to my 3 years on diesel boats. And my first chief of the boat had actually made World War II war patrols, and he would tell us stories. And for a young, naive, wet behind the ears kid from little old Hamlet, it was amazing. He used to talk about crawling through the engine room because the hull had been compressed so much you had to get down on your hands and knees and crawl.
Wow.
And, oh, my goodness. You know.
That's when my claustrophobia would kick in.
Well, once they're dropping those tin cans on you, that'll get your attention.
Yeah.
So the fact that you survived, and when you consider that those diesel boats, and I'm not talking about all of them. I can only speak about the Intimidor SS-340. Our pressure hull was only 15/16 of an inch thick.
Wow.
Just a 16th of an inch less than an inch.
Wow.
Now, you've got all these boats out there now that have special steel. They're multiple inches thick. We even built one boat that was out of aluminum, and it had a very thick hull. And, Lord, you know, we don't talk about that kind of stuff, but it could flat get down there.
Wow.
Then, of course, there's the NR1. I worked with her a lot, and that was Admiral Rickover's secret submarine. He didn't have permission from anybody to build it, but EB built it. And it's actually the submarine that had wheels on it.
Wheels?
Wheels, keel wheels. So that's
Is that to roll it into the water, or do you actually roll on the bottom?
Drive around on the bottom.
It's for being on the bottom.
Huh.
When I was recovering the Challenger out here at the Trident Basin, Port Canaveral, we used the NR1. Well, first thing we did was we had a ship with side scan sonar go back and forth and back and forth. Now, off the Cape here, ever since the Snark and the Shark and the Regulus program, back when the control room people were standing behind a wall of sand and sandbags out in the open, that place is littered with all kinds of debris from early testing that exploded. And the standing joke with the Pan Am employees that used to be out there to help build the place was it was snark-infested waters.
Snarking fest.
So essentially, depending upon which way the sand is moving, it normally goes north-south. But sometimes with currents, whatever, it moves around different ways. Beautiful beaches out there on the Cape. Of course, nobody can go there except folks assigned. It's just absolutely immaculate, loaded with sea turtles and their nest. And there's a group from one of the universities comes down every year. They put hog wire over the nest, and then they drive in the ground four pieces of PVC and to identify where the nest is. And the hog wire is to keep the raccoons and the hogs from digging up the eggs. So,
cool.
But it's, we did the side scan sonar, and everything showed up. Now, of course, nobody knew at the time what all this stuff was. So we had the NR1 come down, and very small submarine. Well, it's not around anymore. But a very small submarine on the inside. It has windows. It has mechanical arms. And they investigated everything that was on the side scan sonar. And it was all recorded. Photographs were taken. Then they move on to the next one. And anything that had to do with the shuttle, then the folks that came later and brought a salvage ship to go around and get all this stuff, and not all of it was picked up. But the NR1, great bunch of submarine guys, you know, I just, to me, it would be fantastic duty to be on something like that. And, they were great help. There was stuff recovered that was identified from the Gemini project.
Wow.
Wow.
I mean, you know, it was like, you know, outside of, used to be, you go outside of a town and there's a junkyard over there with every kind of vehicle you could think of. Well, if it was shot from the space center and exploded, it was out there in the water. So.
Hmm.
Now, we only used salvage ship once, and that was to Four Point more over the capsule. And they have divers with equipment that are streamlined. And they're the ones that went in and got the astronauts out.
Wow.
And I still have a hard time talking about the Challenger recovery. It was one of the more depressing parts of my Navy career. And I didn't mind being ready to blow up half the world, but the Challenger really, really got to me. So it's not what everybody gets to experience and in the service, and I was actually the only one. So
yeah, that would be quite a somber undertaking there.
But yet critically important, very important mission.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, as important
as
it gets.
We got back the part of the shuttle you could actually see where the solid rocket booster was had to blow through, and the flame was hitting the tile. But, of course, the tile was doing its job. It just went from black to white as it heated up and absorbed the heat. So we got that piece back, and there's several photographs in the book that were taken by NASA or from newspapers or whatever. But very interesting.
Listeners, we're talking to retired U.S. Navy Lieutenant Commander Jerry Pate, and we're looking for some callers. If you want to call in and ask a question or make a comment to Jerry, the phone number is 516-453-9902, and his co-guest, Robert G. Williscroft, has a whole bunch of books of his own, and we're going to learn about his Mac McDowell mission series now.
Just a reminder, tonight's episode is an encore presentation, so the telephone and Twitter are closed. We do thank you for listening.
now from Fresh Ink Group and best-selling author Robert G. Williscroft, the Mac McDowell Mission Series. With a security clearance above top secret, Saturation Dive Team Officer in Charge Mac McDowell leads his team into critical Cold War counter-Soviet missions. Watch Mac prove what brave men can achieve under real pressure, the kind that will steal your air and crush the life out of you. In Operation Ivy Bells, it's the summer of 1972 when Mac and his off-the-books deepwater espionage group are conducting a daring undersea wiretapping operation to gather Russian intel and avert world war. Join nuclear submariner Mac McDowell for extreme diving, a battle with giant squid, and more as he risks everything in the most dangerous operation yet. In Operation Icebreaker, Mac McDowell is leading his submarine team for a mission to lay SOSUS arrays under the Arctic ice when they clash with a highly automated Alpha-class Soviet submarine. Overwhelmed by mechanical problems, the Soviet crew abandons their sub near Point Barrow, Alaska. The skipper launches DSRV-1 Mystic so Mac and his crew can board the empty sub and gather intelligence. The arrival of an even more advanced Soviet sub leads to breathtaking underwater clashes with the specter of war looming. Will Mac and his crew be sunk by the Soviets, or will they safely return to Alaska, where Mac's new love, Kate, anxiously waits? In Operation Arctic Sting, Mac McDowell and his team capture the abandoned Soviet sub. Piloting their prize through the ice pack to the U.S. East Coast, they must evade or confront other Soviet subs trying to recover the ship or sink it. Breathtaking deep-sea clashes erupt, including hand-to-hand combat with Soviet Morskoy Spetsnaz divers under the ice. Too far from Tuthis to escape, the Americans are accosted by a 5-ton orca. Will Mac's ship survive long enough to reach friendly waters, or will the men become just another meal for a deadly whale? The McDowell Mission Series by Robert G. Williscroft is available worldwide in jacketed hardcovers, paperbacks, ebooks from Kindle to Nook and Kobo and more, plus exclusive audiobook editions with music and sound effect. The Mac McDowell Mission Series is proudly published by Fresh Ink Group. Take a breath and dive in for thrilling submarine adventures in every Mac McDowell mission.
Yeah, I think he did that last section without taking a breath, too. So that book, that was about the first three books in the Mac McDowell Mission Series. Robert, what's happening with number four?
Number four is completed. We're doing the final edit. In fact, Jill is my number one editor, but I've had beta readers, several of them, give me feedback. I'm waiting for one more feedback from a retired submarine captain Jackson, who will be writing the foreword for the book, and then we'll be sending it to you guys for the magic that you do before you put it out. So you should have it in your hands within a week or two.
Cool, and you've already got a front cover, which is a little bit of a twist for us to have one that far in advance. So, yeah, check out Robert's website and blog and all the places you can find him out there, and he'll be talking about this book. So, Bean,
right.
we understand there's some callers, huh?
Yes, we've got a couple of callers, so we're going to go to the phones. The first one is going to be area code 303. You're on the air. Welcome to the show. What's your name, and where are you calling from?
Hi, this is Jill, and I'm calling from Centennial, Colorado.
Hi, Jill.
Greetings, Jill. Welcome to the show.
Thank you. Hey, Jerry. How you doing?
Hi. Hey, young lady.
I wanted to let you know how much I enjoyed working with your stories. They're all over the place. It was fascinating, and I can't wait to see the book in print. Hmm. One of the stories that I loved involved your son, because he's in SEALs, isn't he?
Well, the SEAL teams have people with certain specialties that are assigned to them, and he was one of those people. And he sometimes just would go along until they went ashore, and he was there when he came back. Sometimes he would go with them and go on a mission.
Well, you asked him to help out with checking out security down at the Cape, didn't you?
Well, I initially went through him to get a contact number of a SEAL team that would like to come down to Cape Canaveral and play. And because you go back to Wernher von Braun when he was first out at Cape Canaveral in SNART, Regulus programs, all that stuff. There is a complex out there of tunnels, control rooms. The entire area is just crisscrossed with these tunnels that come up where bunkers are in different places. And there's a lot of old concrete above ground type structures that aren't, they're totally abandoned. And for Navy SEAL teams to have a place that's already there, which may be fairly close to some other place that they might want to go to one time. You know, those guys like to visit a lot of orphanages and go to nunneries and hand out toys to the kids. So I ended up talking to a senior chief from SEAL Team 8. And he says, yeah, we'd like that. So I said, well, let me talk to Cape Canaveral Air Force Station security people and see if they want to play. So using my contacts there. So it was a great relationship that I helped establish between the SEALs, the Cape Canaveral Air Force Station, and also NASA. And they found out they had a lot of weaknesses from the SEALs. They, you know, they never could find them. And they don't play fair anyway.
No.
In fact, I was called by a security officer from Cape Canaveral, and he goes, what happened to your SEALs? They didn't show up. I said, well, they've been out there on your property for the last two nights. He goes, what? I said, come on down about 2 o'clock in the afternoon and talk to the senior chief. He'll show you videos and stuff. And the SEALs were just thrilled to death with all the obstacles, the tunnels, everything that was already there. I mean, it was, wow, the biggest playground in the world.
Yeah.
And what was happening, they were all looking out at the ocean side, and the SEALs came in from the riverside.
Yeah.
You know, like I said, they don't play by the rules.
No. So,
and then I got a call after SEAL Team 8 left, and there's another group that wanted to come down on a fast attack, an SSN, and out where they could still stay submerged, they would launch the SEALs, who would take their underwater vehicles, and they came down the channel and came into the main harbor at Port Canaveral, and the SEALs got out of the vehicle except for the driver, and they waited until the cruise ship had its hull search done, and then after the divers did all that and left, then they went to the cruise ship and attached themselves to it, and they rowed the cruise ship out to the buoy line, and where they you get out to the last buoy, and then they got off the cruise ship. Of course, at any time, they could have got aboard the cruise ship if they wanted to. But they released whatever device they used to hold on with, and they went aboard the high-speed patrol craft, USS Shamal, and, of course, none of the fishermen ever tell us anything about seeing a submarine or a Navy vessel out there because it's so common, mm-hmm. you know. And our security cameras would not go out that far anyway. So they were all picked up by the Shamal, and they put it in high gear and beat feet. So And then I had a SEAL team that came down and through my friend that was second in second command as a civilian of the NASA security side. And they did some things, and NASA wasn't too thrilled. So, so the SEALs, what the SEALs did was great for them, but it's in the book.
That's our favorite phrase during an interview. Hey, it's in the book.
Yeah.
You know, go get the book.
Well, in the submarine world, it's like, no, that never happened. And if it did, we weren't there. So.
And if you've got photos, that's not us.
Yeah, there's a lot of things submarines do that I don't think the average civilian population could handle. And it's in the book.
Well, thanks for calling in, Jill.
Yeah.
Well, thanks. And I had a wonderful time working through the stories, and I learned a lot. So I really look forward to seeing the book in print.
Yeah, that'll be cool.
Endorsement.
Yeah. Now, over on Twitter, Verwayne Greenhose left a couple of comments. First of all, for Dr. Helen, he says, laugh out loud, I miss you, Dr. Helen. I worked in the ER for 27 years, and you had to be driven to help people to be there that long. Take care of yourself, dear lady. He also says he's walked through that sub that Jerry Pate was talking about up there in Chicago, and he took his son and all of his school buddies through it, and they found it fascinating. And
yep.
He's also put out there on Twitter the video we talked about for Submariner, and he's out there spreading it around on Facebook right now. So thanks for the publicity, Verwayne.
And speaking of Verwayne, I believe that's who's on the phone here. So let's go over to this next caller. Hello, caller. You're on the air. Is this Verwayne?
Yes, sir. You can tell
hey,
by
Verwayne.
That fancy number.
Yeah.
Welcome to the show.
Thank you. Well, first thing I wanted to say was thank you for your service to both gentlemen. And,
yes, thank you.
My
did it for the money.
Exactly.
Say that again. We did it for the money?
Yeah, we did it for the money.
Yeah. And a little bit of the,
my son
for the fame and glory, too.
My son just retired as lieutenant colonel from the Army
after
21 years. So he spent a lot of time in Ukraine, Russia, and Afghanistan. But
Garden
I was wondering, yes, all nice and sandy. But, of the seven seas, how many have you been under?
I've been everywhere but the Arctic, Antarctic.
Antarctic.
I haven't been to the South Pole, but Robert's been down to the South Pole. But I don't believe anything he says or his books.
Calling you out, Robert.
We have to keep calling Amazon and saying, take them out of fiction, put them over, and, you know.
No, I just, like I said, I just want to tell you thank you for your service. I know it takes a lot of dedication of both you and your family. Can you do that?
Oh, yes. I dedicated my book to my wife because we've been married 55 years, and she raised four boys, and she basically did it by herself. You know, I never was. When I was around, we had a great time, but, you know, it takes a very, very special person to be a Navy wife. And of course, now you have military spouses. So, by the way, I'm not PC.
Yeah.
And but I actually took. I was on a ship and we went around the world. So that was in 1983, and we were the first ship of that type to go around the world. And that's. I described that whole thing, and it's
in the book.
It's in the book.
What ship was that?
It was the USS Holland, AS-32.
Wow, all the way around the world.
First, First submarine tender to go around the world.
Wow.
It's very unusual for even a Navy combat ship to go around the world with entire crew from beginning to end. You know, you have ships that will make deployments to various areas, and then maybe after they come back to the States, they'll go somewhere else, and then they'll get moved to Hawaii, relocated, or Japan or whatever, and then they're out doing that stuff. But we left Charleston in April 83, and we got back to Charleston in October 83.
Wow.
I went through both canals, well, the ditch and the canal, and crossed the equator a few times, and the international dateline, and we had all the traditional initiations, and we finally, after 7 months, got back to Charleston, and we had 2 days off, then everybody came back to work, and we hit it. And got the ship ready to go up to the weapons station and relieve as the tender bolted to the pier up there. And the first day that we were the tender, we had 6 submarines alongside and 1 at Wharf Alpha that we were responsible for. So, and I was usually, in my division, I was usually keeping up with anywhere around, roughly, I'd say 1,700 jobs on all
wow.
of the boats.
Yeah,
so,
that's a lot. Now, yeah. you mentioned the canals. I've never pictured or seen any pictures of this before. But you take the submarine through the locks, like you would.
Well, it's on a surface ship, but
okay.
even on submarine, they go through on the surface. Now, the Suez Canal, which is actually nothing more than a ditch through the sand. The pilot says 7 knots, stay in the middle, and then he sits down.
Wow, okay.
That's pretty much about all he does. 7 knots, stay in the middle. So,
yeah.
Now, the Panama Canal was, for me, was a highlight of the around-the-world trip. It was so organized, so efficient, and it's actually, the locks raise you up on the Pacific side to where Gatun Lake is. It's a gigantic lake. And you go through, and it's deep enough and wide enough that other vessels are headed to the Pacific while you're headed to the Caribbean. And then the canal, Panama Canal, actually runs north-south, and it's further east than Charleston, South Carolina.
Hmm.
You know, a lot of folks don't realize how the North American and South American continents fit together, and you know, the east coast of the United States goes straight down the west coast of South America.
Yeah.
That's how convoluted the whole thing is. But there's a major difference between the operation of the two canals, and it's in the book.
All right. Beam, you want to roll another commercial, see if we can sell some books for this co-guest, Robert G. Willis-Croft?
Sure. Thanks for calling, Verwayne.
Yeah.
You're welcome. Take care, gentlemen.
Yep.
You too. All right. Daedalus.
In Daedalus, Navy SEAL Derek Tiger Bailey, irreverent member of the SEAL's Winged Insertion Command, makes a harrowing first base jump in the experimental Griffin 7 hard-shelled wingsuit from the edge of space. He test flies the armor-plated Griffin 10 in Daedalus LEO, catapulting into space by slingshot and dropping from a record-obliterating 160 clicks. Testing the enhanced Griffin 10 MK4 in Daedalus Squad, Bailey's six-man team believes it is fully prepared for hurtling around the world and staging critical re-entry but challenged to innovate life or death solutions with only seconds to spare. It might not survive intact. Then the presidential frontrunner is seized by pirates for ransom in Daedalus combat, and the SWIC team is called to action where it must literally improvise on the fly with everything to lose. Join Tiger Bailey through all four adventures in sci-fi master Robert G. Willis-Croft's Daedalus series, now collected for the first time as the Daedalus Files, SEALS Winged Insertion Command, SWIC.
Yeah. So, Robert, what's the sale price on that first book?
The first book, Daedalus, is free.
Free on Amazon.
And it is sitting up near the top of the list of such books.
Yep. Yeah, every time I look, it's been like in the top 50, if not recently.
Everybody
too.
Likes free stuff.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And so, listeners, you can check out that free copy of the first one and then pick up the other three, or you could just go straight to the Daedalus Files, which is all four books collected in one. So if you like Navy stories and winged suits and whatnot, these are some cool books. So
yes,
our
are.
Guest again is Jerry Pate. We've still got a few minutes left. If anybody else wants to call in, the number is 516-453-9902. So, Jerry, tell us about your first time at sea. You got caught in a North Atlantic storm. You were just a young fella at the time.
Well, when I joined, I was 18 years old, and after submarine school, and I went to my first submarine, I was still 18 years old. And when you go aboard a submarine, especially a diesel boat, the chief of the boat pretty much tells you what you will and will not do, et cetera. So usually as a sonar A school graduate, I would have gone into sonar. However, since sonar had its quota of sonarmen, I was going into the seaman gang, and when it was my time, I would go to go mess cooking, working in the galley, helping the cooks, mainly cleaning up, washing dishes, scrubbing floors, that kind of stuff. Well, the first time we got underway, we headed north. You know, when I say north, out of New London, if we were going north, normally we were operating off Halifax, Nova Scotia, in that area. And we went a little bit further than that, but we got into a storm. And now, I had been deep sea fishing off the coast of North South Carolina way out on some of those 24-hour trips and go out and catch fish. And I knew I wasn't going to get seasick. And the movie Perfect Storm, it was kind of like that, except worse. And as a lookout, you were up, and the Intimidator at that time, when I went aboard, she had already been converted over and had what they call a north sail. Thank goodness, because we were, as lookouts and officer deck, we were right at, I'd say, pretty close to 30 feet above the waterline. But you would climb up the wave, go over the top, and go down very steep side of that wave, and you're looking at a wall of water from the next wave that's coming. And I'm calling them waves because they're not really swells. When you're down off Australia, south of Australia, you are pounded constantly by gigantic swells. But in the North Atlantic, because the wind's blowing, these waves are moving. You got state eight seas. And you know you're not going to go up that next wall, that wave. You're going to go through it.
Yeah. Yeah, I've seen them break. I've seen them break sometimes
and
like
the
that.
Boat
there's no way through.
The boat is literally shaking side to side because half the boat's still coming down a wave. The other half is trying to be pushed up the wave. And you wait until the last minute, and then you yell, everybody, hold your breath.
It's like they needed to be told.
I usually did it, because the officer of the deck, he had already squatted down, and he was under a plexiglass bubble, but to keep him being washed over the side, he would squat down under the very forward part of the bridge where he was, and he would hug the angle iron structure that held the gyro, and he would hang on to that. Now, the lookouts, we were kind of wedged in our holds, and because of the foul weather gear and the rain gear and all that, and you would hold your breath, and next thing you know, you were about 30 feet underwater.
Mm.
And eventually you came out the other side, and because you were essentially part of the sail, which is nothing more than a fairing around all the masts and the antennas. But you had to hold your breath until you came out.
Yep.
And then the officer deck would get up, and by then you'd start climbing up the next wave.
Wow.
And when it got rough, they'd send called down for safety harnesses for the lookouts, and we'd put our harnesses on, and then we'd chain ourselves in position. And some of the folks that I sent that story to that had been on other submarines, they started coming back and telling me, said, "Oh no, we lost an officer deck overboard. We lost a commanding officer. The only thing that saved the lookout was he was dangling from the safety line." So it was a real serious situation to be in. And I get so many questions from people about, why didn't you submerge? Well, as a diesel boat, it's different from a nuke because when a diesel boat submerges, even in calm water, at one point in time, the center of buoyancy and the center of gravity are the exact same point. Anything hits the submarine on the side, that boat's going to start spinning over, turn upside down.
Wow,
then you pour battery acid all over the place. People are falling everywhere. And so you have to ride it out.
Yeah.
You have no choice. Now, the nukes, they're already down a certain depth. If they start rocking, they go deeper. And and when it gets really rough for the diesel boat, that's when the officer deck's finally had enough. He's really starting to get scared. He'll call down to control and say, request permission from the captain to shift the OD and the lookouts to the con, and the captain says, make it happen.
Wow.
And that's when you have to rig the bridge for dive. You don't just bail out and leave it. You have to time everything perfectly, and then you have two lookouts and one OD that are sliding down metal ladders. Normally, if the handrails are dry, you can increase the friction or decrease the friction. When the handrails are wet, there is no friction. And you go, phew, you turn around, you get the next one, boom, and you have to do it as fast as you can. Otherwise, you're going to have somebody coming down on top of your head.
Yeah.
And
the
conning tower hatch, the quartermaster in the con, he goes ahead and pops a hatch, and we come falling through that hatch as fast as we can, and then the officer of the deck is there, and there's a lanyard, two wooden toggles that are hooked into the wire cable, and he's holding both those toggles and pulling that hatch closed with all his weight that he can put on it, and the quartermaster's there dogging that hatch down as fast as he possibly can, because you don't want water in the people tank. That's a no-no.
Well,
so then
Jerry,
you stand the rest of your watch in the conning tower.
Oh. Jerry, we got another caller.
Oh, my.
So beam the call.
All right. This is area code 478. You are on the air. Welcome to the show. What's your name and where are you calling from?
My name is Valerie, and I'm from Kathleen, Georgia, and I am proudly Jerry Pate's cousin.
Welcome
Hi,
to
Valerie.
The show, Valerie.
Yeah.
I'm just so proud of.
She doesn't know what
you're
talking about.
I am just so proud of Jerry, and the way he is now is what I've listened throughout my whole life. He brings every experience to life. So this book is, you know, going to be a great read for anybody. My father served in the Navy, and as much as I don't know about it,
the DE 405.
Yeah,
exactly. So my father was a Navy man, so I heard a lot of stories from my dad, and he's very proud of Jerry and his service, and the two of them, just unbelievable. But I just wanted to wish Jerry much success with his book, and the readers are just going to, they're going to be enthralled with, you know, his great sense of humor and the way he brings the Navy to life.
Thanks, Valerie. I'll get that check in the mail tomorrow.
Yeah, that's a great endorsement.
All right. Well, thank you very much for having him on, and it's been a pleasure to listen. You know, as I said, I always enjoyed throughout the years listening to Jerry, and, you know, it's as I said, a pleasure.
Well, we were thrilled to have him on and entertaining our audience tonight. So thank you for calling in, Valerie.
Between him and Robert Willis Croft, you can definitely get some Navy stories out of these guys, some submarine stories.
Yeah. Endless, endless.
Never happened.
Thank you very much.
We weren't there.
Thanks, Valerie.
Yeah. Thanks, Valerie.
All right, thank you.
Well, all right. Before we leave, and I know we're getting close, I owe a lot to all the chiefs, and especially the chief of the boats and the that I served under. I'm still in touch with several of them, and many of the people in submarine service I served with, and I always looked at what the good people did and what the bad people did, and as I moved up and then eventually got commissioned, I tried my best to always take care of my people. And the enlisted man, the chief petty officers, whether they're chief, senior chief, or master chiefs, there's no finer group of people serving in the Navy than those folks right there. And,
well, Jerry, before we run out of time, I kind of wanted to ask you about one of the interesting things that's in your book, The Spy Across the Street. What's this all about? We've got about 7 minutes left, so tell us a little bit about that.
Well, one of the movies that the Navy seemed to like to beat us to death with is called 115 Volts Deadly Shipmate. And that referred to electrical appliances that hadn't been checked by shipboard electricians that got people killed on board. And the next thing was security, security and security and more security. And once you finished with all that, there was more security and what to look for. And when I came back to NOTU, when they ordered me back because they needed a port operations officer in a hurry, this new family moved in across the street. And this, normally we're pretty outgoing as far as welcoming people to the neighborhood. Well, this guy shows up at my door, he's knocking, and I go and I say, "Hi, my name's so-and-so. We moved in across the street. I'm going to be painting houses, et cetera." And in the conversation, he says, "Yeah, my wife's from Seattle." I said, "Well, that's strange. My wife's from Seattle." Well, immediately, you know, a red flag goes up. You know, that establishes a link.
Mm-hmm.
And then he says, "Well, I'll see you later. You know, I just want to go out and meet the neighbors and stuff." Well, I watched him as he left. He walked back home. He didn't go out meeting the neighbors.
Yeah.
And then he started bugging me and bugging me for a tour of a submarine. And I had never taken anybody on a tour of a submarine that asked for one. And he was just fit to be tied. And one day I came home, he's in my swimming pool, and my wife wasn't too thrilled. And when the admiral's not happy, nobody's happy. So I called an NIS agent in Orlando, and I told him a little bit about this guy. And he says, "Send me his license plate number and make a car," which I did the next day. Well, same day, he called back, and he says, "Under no certain terms will you let this guy on the base or tour submarine." I said, "Okay."
Wow.
So we had a meeting. He talked about things, and they had been in touch with the FBI. And you know, of course, I couldn't let on. They had agents over in one of the shopping centers, and multiple cars. And for a painter, this guy never had any paint on his white pants.
Yeah.
All right, we are about out of time.
Yeah.
We got about 2 minutes left. So how can people contact you? Where can they find you on social media? Blog,
I'm on
website?
Facebook. I'm on Facebook, PAIT.
Okay.
And
it's a picture of you and your wife, right?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah, I take care of her now.
And, of course, if anybody wants to try to get a message to Jerry Pate, we have a contact form at freshinkgroup.com, and we'll always pass
LinkedIn.
Along any messages. LinkedIn?
Yeah,
okay.
I'm on LinkedIn. They keep trying to hire me to be a security guard in a prison. I don't think so.
Well, Jerry, it's been great talking to you. Robert, we appreciate you joining in. You did more listening than anything because Jerry's the one with the stories in the book. But we appreciate both of you being on the show today. And we appreciate the callers and everybody who participated on Twitter. Now, next week, our guest is going to be A.K. Wingler. She's got a new How to Start and Run a Food Truck Business book. This one's for starting and running a food truck business in Tennessee. Oh, no, wait a minute. Georgia or Tennessee?
Tennessee is
the
third one, yeah.
Yeah,
and then
will be
following
the
week,
coming after it.
The following week is a pre-recorded show. It's a brand-new episode, but it's pre-recorded because the author couldn't get into the schedule for a live show. Paul DeBlasi the third, so tune in for that one.
And then after that, we're going to have Kenneth Lindquist, the author of two books on how to teach driving, one for parents, one for instructors.
And after that, we have California author Avanti Sundre. She will be joining us live. So tune in for that.
We also have author Jan Sykes is on the schedule coming up, too, in October.
Coming up, yes. She's sometime in October, so keep an eye out for that one. Keep an ear to the your eyes and ears peeled to the newsletter as well. And we will catch everybody again next week. Thank you for tuning in, everybody.
All right. Thanks, everybody.
Yep. Good night.
Good.
You've been a part of Voice of Indy, a production of Fresh Ink Group. Spread the word, support our guests, then find us at freshinkgroup.com and be sure to hashtag Fresh Ink Group.